You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 174 of Irk FM. It is Tuesday, and it's a very special interview special. We are here at Party Pig Studios here in Girraween in Western Sydney, and I am with half of Scent itself. I have Simon. Hi, Simon.
How are you going?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm good, mate.
And we have Alan. G'day, Alan. How are you?
G'day, Irk. I'm good, man. How are you?
Mate, I am absolutely super. So why don't we start off, Simon? Tell us about your role in Scented Self.
My role in Scented Self, guitar. Done. man, a little bit of everything. Jack of all trades, master of none. I think it's how it goes. So guitar, but also pretty much managing it. Getting all the gigs, making sure Alan shows up to rehearsal time.
Whoa.
You know, a little bit of everything, but it's good. It's a collaborative effort, so not going to take too much credit this time.
Whatever.
Alan, what about you, mate?
In terms of the music, I play drums. Outside of that, I'm going to say it. I pretty much direct Simon. not at all. It's a lie. Simon does do a lot of the background stuff. I guess I consult with him on things that are going on outside of the whole musical part and drumming, all that kind of stuff. Simon and I kind of work together, but Simon does do the majority of the background work. Yeah.
And we should also mention the two guys of the band who actually aren't here today, because we're in the studio that we'll talk about in a moment.
Yeah, what Scott and Sean.
Scott and Sean, those two guys.
Yes, those two. Yes, Scott, our singer, who is not here. I don't know where he is, actually. I don't know where he would be. Somewhere sure. In Newtown. And Sean, he'll be somewhere in Campbelltown. But we're just doing a bit of recording today, so there's no need for them to sit here for 9 hours and watch us argue. So,
which happens a lot.
Yeah, which happens, yeah.
So you guys are here. Tell us why you're here, what the aim is, and how come all of you aren't here, mainly for the listeners who aren't familiar with the recording process and how you guys actually record.
Yeah, so we're hoping to do an album at the end of the year, and when we started investigating that, we took learnings from last time and we recorded our EP and thought, right, we're going to put a lot more thought, a lot more background work into it. So we're doing pre-production, so that's recording all the instruments individually, and then doing that part ourselves to make sure all the ideas are down, because once we get into the studio, you're paying a lot of coin, so you try not to waste too much time redoing ideas and writing songs. So today we're doing drums, and I think we're three songs down. It's only been 4 hours.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't know.
So once we get that done, we'll lay down some bass, guitars, then some vocals, and then put all the bells and whistles on it and see what comes out of it.
So how has that differed from when you recorded your EP?
EP was basically jump into the studio after playing the song 231 times.
233.
Sorry. And we just went in, recorded it, and just try and get it done as quickly as possible. There really wasn't too much rewriting or putting down new ideas, which, you know, would have been nice at the time. But, you know, it is what it is, and we're happy with the EP. But, yeah, a lot more production is hopefully going to go into this.
And, of course, I was at your EP launch.
Yeah.
Which it was an absolutely epic night over at the Valve Bar at Tempe.
Huge, yeah. We didn't think we'd get that many people through the door for that.
Yeah, but it was just a fun night. Like,
yeah, we had some great bands on that night as well.
Yeah, we had Simulacra open and then Foundry Road and Emotus, who I know your listeners really enjoy, and we do as well. That's why we asked them along. But it was just a lot of fun. It was just a whole bunch of people who really liked their music playing together, and yeah, it was just good.
It was nice that night actually as well, that people actually stuck around to the end.
Yeah,
because as the case is with a lot of shows, you know, people come see their band and then bugger off. Thankfully in our case, when we did our EP launch, people actually stuck around. So when we played at the end of the night, the room was packed, and that was awesome to see, and it was awesome to play to as well. So you're totally happy with that.
Because it must be pretty deflating if you're the headliners and you see the people at the previous bands, and then all of a sudden they've disappeared.
It's a little, it's actually very disheartening. It's not a little disheartening, it's extremely disheartening. But there's only so much you can encourage people to stay behind and watch the other bands, because then it just becomes a demand if you're not careful and people don't respond well to that. So there's only so much you can do in reality.
But it's also, there's a lot of contributing factors there. I mean, there's people putting on 10 band shows in venues and that, and you don't expect somebody who's come to see the first band to stay for the 8 hours or so until to see the last band. So I completely understand that. You know, I organised that gig from Woe to Go, and so I was very conscious of only having, you know, 4 bands max, really quick changeovers, and, you know, bit of introductions and just little bits and pieces to make sure people enjoyed the night and it flowed well.
Yeah.
And it was good in the end. But in terms of people not staying all the way to the end, I think it's, yeah, a lot of contributing factors. I'm not going to point fingers at anybody, past, present, or future.
Wow, that was really political of you.
I know, right?
And plus, you'd know also know how it feels, because you guys go out and watch other bands as well. So you're not just talking from a viewpoint of an artist; you're talking also from an audience member as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The same thing can be said for even people who only want to see the last band. You know, they won't go to the first couple of bands unless it's somebody they know or they've heard before. It's a double-edged knife. Where do you start? Where do you finish?
Yeah, exactly right. So what would be your favourite Sydney music venue, seeing as though we're talking about them?
To play or to go see bands?
Oh, we can talk about both.
To play... the Wall's good.
The Wall's a good stage. I like it. It's a nice big stage, good room, good sound.
And Gaelic Theatre was fun.
Yeah, because it's got the mezzanine. So that'd be nice to play, like, when it's a little bit busier. But and Valve's been really good to us. Obviously, we did the launch there, and Greg was awesome there and helping us out.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good venues out there. In terms of going seeing bands, my favourite's the Enmore. I don't know about you.
Yeah, Enmore.
We saw Opeth there last year.
Yes, we did. I've got to say, though, after seeing Carnival at Evans Theatre in Penrith, that's actually not a bad venue.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's like a mini Luna Park, the way it's set up and everything.
Yeah, not a fan of Horton Pavilion at Fox Studios, got to say. Don't like that venue.
Yeah. I've seen some McHaggies there.
Now, of course, you guys were with me at Carnival, at the gig that Alan was just mentioning.
Yeah, yes.
How good would it have been if you guys had have been on that stage? Oh, what would that have God. Meant?
Instead of the DJ?
What was that all about?
I don't know.
That was interesting selection of support act there. If we had been lucky enough to score a support role on that bill, I probably would have died happy that night if I had keeled over for some inexplicable reason. That would have been epic beyond all proportions, really. I don't really know how else to explain that.
Yeah, but I mean, we know that, you know, we're a while away from that, you know, so it's a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A case of who you know and what you know and showing that you can get X amount of people to a gig, which, you know, sucks because, you know, it's a bit chicken and egg. You want to play gigs to build up the fans, but then again, you can't get gigs unless you show you have X amount of fans, and
yeah,
the whole keeps going in on around itself. But, you know, hopefully get there one day.
Mm. So it's something to aim at.
Yep.
Definitely something to aim at there, I think. So, Simon, how did you get into music in the first place?
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's a huge question.
That's deep. Didn't know we'd go deep, so deep so fast.
Wait, are we talking about the same thing still?
Cough.
What?
Dad's musical. Dad's a music teacher. He's a really good piano player, and there's always been music in the house. So, yeah, just always been surrounded by music, and then there was piano lessons when I was a kid. Hated that. And to the
seems to be a common theme with kids learning piano.
Yeah, no, it was good, and, you know, part of me wishes I'd kept it up, but... yeah, I remember locking myself in the bathroom once because I just didn't want to go to my lessons, and I think that was one of my final ones. Yeah,
that's creepy.
I hated that guy. Not the guy in the bathroom, the teacher.
And there was another guy in the bathroom? Or was it you?
Yeah, but we don't talk about him.
Wow.
So then when I was about 15, I picked up the guitar, learned at school, and started playing classical guitar, and then picked up the electric and started writing. Always been writing, and a lot of the songs that we play today are... you know, were written years before Alan and I got together. But on our first jam, we wrote Neverland.
What is now Neverland.
Just played the riff, and Alan went, okay, done. Let's keep going with this. So,
yeah,
that's my musical journey in 25 words or less.
With more than 25 words, mate. I've got to break it to you. Sorry.
Trust you, the counter.
So what about you, Alan? How did you get in, mate?
I was another one who started on piano.
Did you hate it?
No, I actually really enjoyed it.
Did you lock yourself in the bathroom?
No, I didn't lock myself in the bathroom with another mysterious person.
He does that these days for another reason.
When did I start playing piano? Around year four, I think. Year four, year three.
Little Alan. Like,
yeah, little Alan.
Did you have a beard back then?
No, I didn't have a beard back then. I had a bit of a mow at year six, though.
Really?
Yeah,
you were that guy.
I was that guy who had, you know, the beard in year six. Or who was starting to shave in year six, but that's another point. continued to play through the beginning of high school, and at about year eight, I kind of decided drums were way cooler, much to my parents' dismay. And
your neighbours.
And my neighbours, yeah, they weren't happy either. And self-taught myself how to play the drums, have never had a professional lesson in my life. I've watched a couple of DVDs and watched a lot of YouTube clips. Yeah, I'm playing myself up here, Simon. Don't give me that look.
No, I was just going to say it shows today, but that's fine. That's awkward silence, everyone.
when this interview is over, do you know what's going to happen, Simon?
Sideways.
I can't explain to you because we're being recorded, but it will not be pleasant, all right? From there, I pretty much learnt, you know, by myself, blah, 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 blah. It wasn't until a few years ago where I decided I should probably start to make an attempt at doing something worthwhile with it. And that was in 2008 when I met this fool over here. And I'm going to say it. You waving, they can't see that, Simon. Just stop it, all right?
They can feel the air go past the microphone.
What's wrong with you? Were you dropped on your head as a child? So, I'm going to say it. All right. Right now. Who answered whose ad? The big mystery. Simon answered my ad. So that means that technically it's my band. I don't care what he thinks.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, totally. Right. but Simon's absolutely right. The first jam that we had was pretty much... we started writing what's now known as Neverland. But I think what was most memorable for me about that jam was that it wasn't a case of, so do you want to do this again? It was a case of, when do you want to get together again next? And for me, that was pretty much, yeah, this is going to work out for me.
So talk me through the ad process.
We're going to delve into that.
Well, apparently I answered. So Alan, you can take this answer.
Oh, wow, thanks. That's so benevolent of you. Someone's getting jealous.
Benevolent.
Big word for a drummer, right?
I know, right?
This is what I've got to put up with, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you just pity me? I would.
Pity you for other reasons.
It's the beard, right? It's always the beard.
It's always the beard.
It was pretty much a case of I put an ad on Faster Louder, I think it was, and I had a couple of bands and people contact me and just wasn't I tried it with a few of them, but it just wasn't happening. And I was about to give up on the whole thing and sort of say, you know what, I just don't care anymore, whatever. I'll just be a garage player for myself.
I saved you.
Don't. Just stop talking, Simon. Put the microphone down. And I think from memory, when we first put a date to meet up, I pulled out because I was sick.
Yes.
And then when I started to get, I think I had a cold or some ridiculous crap like that. I know, pathetic, right?
I don't know. Just a man cold.
Know, not, yeah. Not a very rock of you.
No, yeah. not metal.
No, I can't
at all.
Play that. Sniffle.
Yeah, not metal at all. We made another date for it and, you know, came back in and did that. But I didn't even put an ad in Drum Media or anything like that. It was just, I'll just use the net. That's what it's there for. It's free, whatever. It was just a case of, you know, on the net, this one over here responded.
So when was this?
2008.
Mid 2008. And then we started jamming in Alan's room out in Penrith.
Penno.
And yeah, it was just a couple of weekend jams on that, and we used to write song structures on his window with whiteboard markers.
That's right. It's still there. Yeah.
So you know, I used to drag my amp over, and that was a Frankenstein of an amp back then. Just cabs and
it was
just everything pulled together from everyone until I got myself a real amp. And
totally metal though.
I know, right? And
better than me not, you know, showing up for the first jam because I had a cold.
This
so
is true.
Pathetic. Why did I even say that?
And so jamming in his room, and then, you know, slowly built the band from there.
Yeah.
So how did the other two guys who aren't here, how did they sort of fit in? Do they answer ads as well? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we've gone through some lineup changes, and the latest incarnation's probably been around since late last year, so late 2010.
Yep.
Scott, he answered an ad, and he came in one day, and he sang Neverland.
Yeah.
You know, which was a whole different song back then. And he came in and he sang it, and he was like, oh, okay, cool, I'm just going to jump out and just go to the bathroom or something. And we just, when he left the room, we just looked at each other and went, what the hell was that?
Yeah, where did this come from?
Which is what the song is today. He just totally blew us away.
Yeah.
He just breathed new life into all our songs.
I remember just, when that happened, when he walked out, he turned around to me and he's gone, he sung during the 5-4 part. I lost what I was doing.
Yeah, exactly. which was awesome. You know, he challenges us, and I think he challenges himself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Vocally, which is, I think, what he likes about the band.
Yes.
You know, he's not a metal person, quote unquote. So,
no, he's not inherently, no.
But he likes what we do, which is, you know, really flattering and awesome.
Yeah. It's actually good to have somebody like that who isn't so inclined, because they come in from a different point of view. And they can sort of say, let's try this, let's try that. And with our style of music, that works well, having a lot of progressive sort of elements to the band. That just feeds that. This is a Neverland.
And Sean was also Sean didn't answer around. He came through.
Came through a friend.
Through Pat from Dawn Heist. So yes, I think he works. Sean works with Pat. And he came in, was jamming, and we thought, this guy's really good. He kind of gets it, and was putting down some good ideas. And
that's right.
How we built it from there. And so we got four good strong musos in here writing hopefully some good music.
So, for the listeners, how would you classify your music?
Oh, God, I hate this question. In its simplest form, you could say progressive metal.
Yeah, we just call it prog. Yeah. We stopped trying to classify ourselves, a while ago.
Yeah.
We didn't know whether we were metal, whether we were thrash, whether we were rock or hard rock or alternative or whatever. So, yeah. we just say prog.
Because some of our songs just flick in between different genres, it's difficult to sort of say this is what we are.
It must be hard on some websites where it says, okay, tick as many boxes as applies.
Yes, that's...
Yeah, generally we go for prog and then metal, alternative, whatever. We try not to pigeon ourselves, man. Pigeonhole ourselves. Pigeon ourselves?
Stop it.
No, we don't want to pigeon. Stop, you don't want to pigeon yourself.
I don't want to pigeon myself.
Do you want to pigeon? I think I've seen a website dedicated to that. It was not pretty.
Do you want to be pigeoned?
Not by you. Or anyone for that matter. Don't look at me like that.
Move on.
So tell me about the name Sent Itself. How did that come about?
Or yours. Dear
God. Simon and I were arguing for, as you do with any band.
You and off. Simon argue? Really?
Wow, I know, right? Weird.
No comment.
We were arguing over a number of different names. Simon was, if I recall, interested in having the name Ark in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
You were dead set on that.
Was I?
Mm. We were talking about it for about a month, maybe more.
Yep.
What we were going to... Because it's an important part of any band. You know, what are you going to call yourselves? slightly disturbing, but I'm going to say it. I'm thinking about it one day in the shower, and I'm sort of going, what are we going to call this? I'm throwing all these names around in my head. I don't know why, I don't know how, but the name, but the idea of being the opposite of self-centered was an interesting idea and thought to me, and there were a lot of connotations in that I thought would feed into the music.
Yep.
So I thought, centered self, that's kind of a cool name. There's a lot of subtext going on there. I can deal with that name. Threw it out at Simon, and his first impression was...
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Something like that.
Probably. We'll go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Well, done, sold. So that's... The name didn't come from anything special. It was just Alan standing in the shower thinking out names. And there you go. Creepy, right?
Nah, it's always
one
interesting.
One of the best things come out of your shower in a while. Let's be honest.
Yeah, true.
No, it's always interesting to find out how bands get their names.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, try not to read into it too much. You know, it's a name that sometimes you have to, you know, repeat to people. No, centered as in like middle, not smell.
And it's always interesting from people from the US because they spell it differently.
Yeah, which is...
I've spoken to a couple of people from the US and you say, oh, we're centered self. And they go, okay, fine, you're on the net anywhere. And you go, no, look at the Australian spelling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's different. That's one drawback, but other than that...
Yeah, and everyone takes something different from it, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I like about it. People can make their own decisions as to what it means.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the singing, songwriting, the meat and the potatoes. Who or what inspires you when it comes to songwriting, into music?
Yeah, you go first, Simon.
Well, I mean, all the songs come from a riff. We all like, you know... It sounds cliche, but you know, your Metallicas and I like Machine Head and all those guys. So a lot of stuff's really based around a riff, and that's where it kind of, the song gets its character from. And then we just build on from there. So I'll come in sometimes with, you know, a riff, which is a couple of bars, and a whole song spawned from it, or I'll come in with like sections of songs and we'll chop it around. But it's everybody collaborating and putting forward ideas. And you know, sometimes Scott will sing what he hears in his head that the riff should do, and then I mimic it on guitar, which is...
Yeah, he's done that a couple of times.
Yeah, he goes, no, do it like this, da-da, or whatever it is, and then I have to try and work it out, and then, you know, it works, which is great, because I never wanted to be the main songwriter in the band, because then the songs would be limited by my own, you know, technical ability, which is, you know, not that high. So we just all chip in, really.
That's true, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, not about my ability.
What?
No, go on.
Mm-hmm. I haven't picked up an instrument. I don't know how to play guitar. Seriously, yep. A couple of weeks ago, we tried Simon on drums.
Yeah, we all swapped instruments.
We all swapped instruments. Simon was on drums.
Epic fail.
I attempted badly to play Simon's guitar. It was just catastrophically terrible. The only thing I can really do in terms of contributing to a song is help structure it,
yep.
Throw out some ideas. Similar to what Scott would do, I can't sing. So whenever I sort of sing a note or try to, you know, sing a melody or whatever, it's Simon's going to sit there and go, huh, I don't get what you're trying to do. So my usefulness pretty much come in, you know, suggesting ways to structure it and sort of saying, no, that section there needs to have something before it because it's just too whatever. But... Yeah,
but I don't play any other instrument. We also take a long time because nothing gets added to a song and nothing makes it past the first process unless it, you know, gets us excited. So
that's very true.
We're not going to
settle
on any riffs or parts of songs.
We've had a couple of times where we've tried writing songs. We spent maybe an hour or two on it and we've just sort of gone, you know what, this just isn't doing it for me, and we've scrapped the whole thing.
So if it doesn't do it for us, then it just doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask the standard... Irk FM singing songwriting question.
Oh dear God.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're in bed, you're asleep, and you have a really great idea. What do you guys do?
I try and remember it I have that all the time. I write songs in my head all the time when I'm on the train or wherever. Like, I'm always got something going on in my head.
Really?
Yeah.
There's so always not just a pretty face?
No, not just a pretty face. That's me and Alan awkwardly staring at each other. If I could get up and I could record it, I would. But given the you know, lateness, the silence, and people being asleep, it's probably not practical.
I haven't actually had that happen to me, so I have no idea how I'd react. To be perfectly honest,
you've never had ideas.
You know what? You are such a waste of my time sometimes, Simon. You, every day with you is like a kick in the nuts. Seriously.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened.
Harsh.
That's a bit harsh, yeah. After you said such nice things about me, now I know how you really feel.
Well, this is why you should learn to shut the hell
this
up.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is... What would I do? I would probably either message Simon on my phone so that I know it's written down, both on my phone and his, and, you know, he turns his phone off or puts it on silent of a night so I know it's not going to wake him up. And if it did, well, it's his own damn fault. That's probably what I'd do. Or I'd just jump on the computer really quick because it's always on and just write it out or whatever.
Yep.
That's probably what I'd do, I guess.
So I asked Brad, the drummer from Foundry Road, this question, and I know you two guys know each other quite well.
Yes, we've known each other since high school.
That would have been an interesting experience. Were you sort of competing against each other, like comparing notes as drummers?
Oh, no, we're not going to get into this, are we?
Yeah, measuring tape.
Okay. Brad has this thing where he continually says to me, oh, you're such a better drummer than me. And I'm like, no, dude, that doesn't mean a damn thing. And I hate him saying that to me because I don't look at it like that. I don't look at it as a point of view of you're better than me, I'm better than you, he's better than you, I'm better than him, whatever. None of that means a damn thing, because ultimately it comes down to, does what you're playing suit the music?
Yep.
And if the answer is yes, then everything else doesn't mean a damn thing.
Yep.
And for what Brad's doing, it suits the music.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, there is no difference between the way Brad and I play in terms of what we do with our bands. It's different styles, therefore the drumming is going to be different. Therefore, we're both just as good as each other. That's the way it works.
Yeah, Brad doesn't need a 21-piece kit with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, but that looks awesome on a stage.
It does look
so
awesome.
So stop your whinging and just accept it. This is happening.
Now, you are becoming a bit well-known for your massive drum kits.
Really? Wow, okay.
So,
and I like that you got it right and went kits. Because there is more than one.
Just because I finished ordering my third kit, waiting for it all to come in, and there will be a fourth, doesn't mean a damn thing, all right?
No. So what's your biggest kit? You said you got something like 21 pieces to work
on. No. Okay, well, the kit that I'm using in the studio here is the biggest kit that I have.
For the people that aren't here, we're just turning around to our right and just looking at Alan's kit.
Yeah, it's not small, I will say that. This is the second kit. The first kit that I have is a 10-year-old Tama Rockstar. So it's a 20. It's a year 2000 model, a wine red custom model. But it's, you know, it's still a good nick.
Yep.
But I wanted to get something new, so I bought this behemoth. It's a 10-piece with 14 cymbals. Yes, holy crap. Which equates to 6 toms, 2 octobands, a snare, and 1 bass drum, and 14 cymbals. I'm not going to go into exactly what they all are. It's just a waste of time. The third kit I'm buying is a Tama Hyperdrive 2011 model. It's going to be significantly smaller than this.
If anyone from Tama is listening, you know, well, you know where to find us.
And the fourth kit I'm buying is a Tama Silver Star, little 4-piece jazz thing, and that's for a side project that Simon and I are doing outside of Zen itself.
Have you ever had trouble fitting all your kit on stage?
Almost.
Yeah, we've worked around it a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah.
We got the whole setup and breakdown down to like a pit crew. Like,
yeah, we do. Yeah.
He's got it labelled pretty well, and we all know where everything goes. So.
Yes. And it's on a rack. Previously, when it was all individual stands, it was a bit, you know, close. But now that it's on a rack and I've, you know, brought down its footprint.
It's a nice
footprint.
Rack.
Thank you, Simon. Stop looking at my chest. It breaks into three separate sections. So yep. You've got the left-hand side, the front side, and the right-hand side. and you can take it all apart and put it all on in one big thing. So it's much easier than dealing with individual stands, so the rack is a huge help. But, yeah, drum kits are fun.
Because I can remember being at Club Lead at Parramatta and thinking, would Alan fit all his kit on that stage?
We haven't played there yet, no. So it'd be an experiment to find out, I suppose.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
But we have the first gig we ever did was at the Sando in Newtown, and we played downstairs in the main pub area.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And that was the tiniest stage where I was actually on the floor, you know, right next to people sitting down just having a drink. There's no way we could do that these days.
No. At that stage, I was using my 2000 model,
yep,
which only has four toms as opposed to the...
Yeah, whatever.
As opposed to the six that I have now. Those smaller stages would have worked back in those days, but these days... And that's another thing why I'm buying one of the other kits as well, is that I've got a smaller kit so that if the stage isn't as big, I can still fit a kit on there, it just won't be the big one.
Because when you're going to these venues for the first time, do you actually go to the venue beforehand and size things up?
Yeah, I try to. Especially with this thing now, the size that it is, it's coming to the point now where I almost have to, and or contact the venue and say, what's the drum riser you've got, or what's the stage size, because I need to work out whether I can fit my gear on there or not.
A good bookie will also tell us that information beforehand, you know.
Absolutely.
When they organise a gig, they'll send us the info and say, you know, there's a drum riser and its dimensions are X by Y, so we know that.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the difference between being here in a studio and playing live. What's the difference for you guys?
Oh, man.
Wow, huge question.
Well, in terms of other people in the room, not much. No, I'm joking. I don't know what the difference... Like, it's fun to... You get different levels of excitement. Like, when you're in the studio and you write a new song, or
you're there for different things.
You know, you come across a new chord progression or a new riff, or Scott sings a new vocal line, or, you know, whatever. It's exciting, and it's like, yeah, I love being in the room with these, you know, these three other blokes, and we're making music, and it's a lot of fun. But then you step out on stage, and it's like, okay, let's present this to everyone. And when you're on stage and you see people getting into it, like I remember at the EP launch, the people in the front row were all nodding their heads along, and it's like, that's awesome. Like that's why you do it. Sounds cliche and wanky, but you know that when you see other people responding to what you've created, I mean,
yeah.
If you other people just don't understand that, and that's something that, you know, it's difficult when you're talking to, you know, colleagues at work or something, and they say, you know, so you play in a band? Oh yeah, what's that like? But they just don't get it.
Yeah.
When you get that reaction from people.
Mm.
What about you, Alan?
His aim is just to hit the toms in the right place and not drop any sticks.
That's right, yeah. For me, it's actually a huge difference in a studio sort of environment. I'm not worried about getting my kit on and off stage so quickly because it is a big kit, and I'll be honest, it is a pain in between, you know, sets to get the kit on stage and get it off again. When people also want to come up to you and talk to you, hey, that's really cool, tell me about your drum kit, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, don't get me wrong, a lot of people coming up to me and asking me that kind of stuff, but when I'm trying to get the kit on and or off stage, it's like, can you hang on for a few minutes? I've got something to do. playing in a studio is just for ourselves, writing or rehearsing or whatever, is fun for a lot of different reasons because, like Simon was saying, we get to, you know, write some songs or just jam out the ones that we already know because we like the songs. But for me, I would much rather be playing live because there's an adrenaline element involved.
Yep.
And even playing to an empty room, or not empty room, but only to a couple of people, if you can see that those couple of people are stopping what they're doing and actively paying attention to what you're doing, that's enough for me. If you can see people up the front, like we saw at our EP launch, getting into it, then that's even better.
Yep.
But I'll take what I can get.
Do you have any, on the night of the gig, do you have any superstitions or special preparations that you do?
No.
I've seen you spin around and touch the ground five times while rubbing your belly a couple of times, Simon.
This is true, but it's four times, actually.
Oh, sorry.
So you haven't really been paying that close attention.
No, I just see weird movement and I look away and go, oh, he's doing his thing again.
Whatever. Exactly. No, I mean, I think as long as we're warmed up, that's the main thing. I like to have clean hands before I pick up my guitar. Like, I wash my hands, but that's about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I do that, like, when I'm playing at home or anywhere. I think it's also just because I don't want to get stuff all over my strings.
Okay.
Is that weird?
Yeah. I never noticed that.
Well, that's because I'm off in the bathroom doing my own thing.
I don't want to know about what you do in the bathroom. Really.
Coming up with band names.
Or hiding from piano teachers.
Or hiding from piano.
This is true.
Oh, God.
Well done, well done.
Touché. I don't really do anything. I'm too busy stressing about, am I going to get my kid on stage quick enough? Am I going to get my kid off stage quick enough? I don't know. I don't really have any sort of preparation or anything. I do try, actually, and find a chair somewhere that I can just grab some sticks and try and do a couple of paradiddles or whatever beforehand. Yeah. So we're not
always warm up, especially the stuff that we play, you know. I don't think there's any...
Excuse me, I was answering. I don't know who the hell you think you are.
Sorry. I'll just take a ticket and wait in line.
Yeah, learn your place.
Oh, I know where that is now.
Don't whisper, it's creepy.
Is it?
Mufasa. yeah, I'll just try and find a chair somewhere and just try some paradiddles and see if I can just get my feet getting, you know, warmed up or whatever beforehand. Otherwise, I'll get on stage and I'll be like, I sound like crap. And Simon, of course, will be the first one to tell me.
Exactly, because you haven't shown me your paradiddles.
I'm keeping my shirt on, okay?
Do you drum in traffic? If you're stopped at the traffic lights?
I do. I'll be sitting in the car, and just tapping the steering wheel, or I'll be tapping whatever I've got my head. Well, I shouldn't really say that.
But you're pretty good though. Like, if we've gone out.
Hey, wait, did you just give me a compliment?
No.
Oh.
Oh, half a one maybe.
It was beginning to sound like a compliment.
See where this goes.
I just thought I should warn you beforehand.
I know. Don't want to give you unduly.
No.
You know, if we go out, like, to see a movie or whatever, something, he's not sitting there at the table. Like, I've been with drummers that just sit there and they're tapping all the time on everything they can get their hands on. It's just like, stop! Which you don't do, thankfully. Otherwise, I'd break your fingers.
I do it, but I don't think I do it as frequently as people would expect, I guess. I don't know.
I'm just so used to you being annoying, I just kind of block it all out.
Huh.
See how it's not a compliment anymore?
I remember you said that.
So how important is a drummer to a metal band? That's the other question that I asked Brad that I thought you'd be interested in.
Glad he didn't direct that at me.
Well, yeah, you don't get to answer this question, Simon. Shut up. Well, there's a couple of examples where you can compare. I mean, if you look at a band like Apocalyptica, their first couple of records, there's no drums, there's only cellos. And you can hear a significant difference in what you would expect. Like, the first couple of songs, the first record, which just plays Metallica, you've heard the songs before, you know what they sound like, but you're not hearing it without drums. And then you can go back and hear the actual record with the drums, and you sort of go, there's a huge difference. There's a massive difference. I think the drums play a very important role. There's a lot to be said for picking the right rhythm and the right beat for the drums that go towards the rest of the song. A different rhythm being played against the same melody, you know, a collection of different rhythms can give the same melody a different feel. Picking the right one is, for me, where the trick is. You know, what are you putting your emphasis on? What sort of time signature are you looking at? How are you breaking it down? How clever do you want to be? How prominent do you want to be, or do you want to sit back? So a lot of different stuff going on that you can pick and choose from, which sometimes I'll just go, you know what, I've got too many ideas in my head, and I'll ask other boys, you know, what do you hear me doing here? And I've asked that a couple of times.
Yeah, and it's also like for what we're playing, you know, we're changing signatures sometimes every bar.
Yeah.
You know, waveform, I think, changes time signatures 3 times within about 12 bars.
And yes.
The drums are pretty important to make that seamless, because if you don't have, you know, appropriate drumming in between, it can just
sound like a dog's breakfast.
Yeah, it just sounds like a mess. So,
yeah.
But I think that's with any style of music. You know, every instrument is important to the style of music you're playing.
Absolutely it is.
So,
you're trying to take away some of my thunder right now, aren't you?
Exactly.
Because he's asking about drums, and now he's sort of going, oh, but every instrument is important.
No, I'm saying drums are important in every style of music, so really I'm turning it back on Erk. How's that?
This is some kind of PR stunt, isn't it? I know it.
Not really.
Whatever. But actually, that's something very important that you said before was mask. Yeah, I'm actually going to try and give you props now. Just pay attention and see how it's done. something that Simon said before, which was trying to make the time signature changes sound seamless.
Yep.
That's a huge part of it for me. And some of my favorite drummers, Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater or X-Dream Theater, and Gavin Harrison from Porcupine Tree, and even Thomas Hart from Meshuggah. They're my three big ones, and I take a lot of my cues from them in terms of how I approach different time signature changes and all that kind of stuff. Gavin Harrison, for me, is just the master of masking time signature, odd time signatures, yep, and making it sound like 4-4. So that's something I try and do as best I can. How well I do it, I'll leave everybody to, you know, make their own decisions on.
Mm. Now, you play your songs at gigs, you rehearse, you're doing things like you're doing now. Do you vary it up to make it a bit interesting, or to, you know, keep the interest in, to give the people...
This is a discussion we have so often.
No, we have, you know, we... Sometimes you're playing the song for the 233rd time, and you're just like, you know what, I'm going to play it really stupidly fast this time and see what happens, or we will change, you know, we'll play in a reggae style, which we've done a couple of times. Which is, you know, turns out to be interesting, but, you know, nothing that
we'll ever... We should actually purposefully go and do that. We should get everybody in for one day for a jam and go, we're not going to play our song as we normally do. We're going to try and play it, you know, acoustic, or we're going to try and play it, you know, reggae style or whatever, which we've done a couple of times, and they sound really, really good, but we just never record them.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a bit of fun. But
it's just harmless fun, you know, it just breaks it up because, you know, you play the song, like you said, a million times, and you sort of go, it sounds good, but, you know, been there, done that.
Yeah.
So do you try and vary things up while you're playing? Like, drummers have got different ways that they can, you know, use cymbals and use drums or whatever. Are you a fan of like pedals and effects and all of that sort of stuff, Simon?
My setup's pretty basic. Simple, pretty basic now that I'm just turning out of the corner for those listening at home. I mean, I'm just using a Marshall JVM-410H, which is just a four-channel valve amp. And 4x12 speaker cab, which is the 1960A, I believe. And that's a bloody brilliant amp because you've got four channels, but each one's got three different settings on it, so you can go...
And for those listening at home, the drummer's eye is just glazed over.
Exactly. Shut up, this is my turn, bitch. So you get 12 different sounds out of the amp before you even do anything to it. But, you know, then I'm just using a Boss delay and a chorus and a Dunlop wah. It's pretty simple. I don't, you know, I'd love to get into, you know, the effects that Carnival use or Matt Bellamy from Muse uses. But to me, I just don't want to tap dance, you know, during a song.
No, now that you say that, I want to see it. Make it happen.
Tap dance during a song?
Yes.
Maybe. For your birthday.
Make sure you wear a tutu.
Oh. How awkward.
Very, very awkward.
Yeah.
Because I have seen, like, I can see the size of where your pedals are, and I've seen guys like double that sort of size, and they're always seem to be reaching for a separate pedal for a separate effect.
I mean, you know, when you're big enough and you can get MIDI output, or you can hire an underling to, you know, press the buttons for you, you know, that'd be nice. But
underling,
yeah. But I just, you know, I might add a few more down the line, but it's nothing that I'm really too interested in at the moment.
So you've got your EP out, you've got the album hopefully later this year.
Fingers crossed.
What's your favourite songs on the EP?
Ooh.
Oh. You first.
They're all really good, but...
If we do say so ourselves.
Well, you know what, yeah, totally going to, you know, play ourselves up a bit here. For me, though, of the three songs on the EP, I'm going to have to say that Waveform is my favourite because there are lots of different time signature changes. But I'm going to big note myself here. But if you didn't know any better, it would just seem and sound seamless. Like, you wouldn't be able to pick it unless you were a muso and you could just instinctively know it. Or, I don't know, you're just sitting there writing now going 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. But if you weren't counting any of that stuff and you're just, you know, your normal average everyday person who likes listening to music, I'm kind of hoping they won't notice it.
Yeah.
But for me, that song's just a crap load of fun to play.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And Scott's vocals in it are
Oh, yeah.
Epic. Yeah, you know, it's a bit Chris Cornell in there, but he hits some notes that just hurt me to even think about. When he was doing that in the studio, you know, remember we were recording.
Oh, yeah.
And the producer, Antonio Hanna at Freefall Studios.
Say it faster. Say it slower because then people heard.
Antonio Hanna.
From?
At Freefall Studios.
You can look him up on Facebook, people. Okay, thanks, go.
You know, we said...
Shameless
plug. That's a pretty high note you're hitting there, Scott. He goes, I want to try and put some harmony over the top. And then he just sings a high F or whatever it was. And we've just gone, just looked at him and this is my stunned face. And we just went, what?
Yeah, it was one of those moments where you could feel your testicles sort of rise up into your throat kind of thing. It's like, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
So how was he doing that?
I think his testicles rose up into his throat.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty much exactly what was going on.
I don't know. He just has an idea and he just goes for it. He's not worried about, you know, what people are going to think. He's got an idea and he goes for it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
More than what it seems, close to being some.
brings, he's got, you know, different sounds that he plays with vocally, and on live on stage uses the megaphone, which is, you know, Loving gives him a, you know, different vocal quality. But I think it's just mostly just giving it a go.
Yeah, I
was actually going to ask about the megaphone, because I saw that at the last gig of yours that I went to at the Lewisham. And he's got the megaphone, and he's got the megaphone out of his mouth, and then he's got the microphone underneath the megaphone. And I'm thinking, what's all this about?
Well, it's just an idea.
It's like, just to ornament the music a little bit.
We were recording, and there's a kind of megaphone, telephony sound during Measure of Madness? I don't know. I don't even know my own EP. But he does it, and then we thought, you know, how are we going to do it live? And then I just thought one day, you know, let's get him a megaphone. So I texted Sean Allen, said, let's, you know, just buy him a megaphone.
Yeah, see what happens.
So we did. Yeah. And I just ordered it. It was at my door like 24 hours later, and then just gave it to him during rehearsal and said, here you go, here's a new toy.
Yeah.
And since then, he's brought in a kazoo.
Yep.
A guero fish. What's that thing?
Whatever that thing is.
You know? So he likes playing with different instruments, which is great. So I think he's going to slowly build up an armory of stuff that he can play as well.
Yeah, all for it too. It's just adds a bit of fun to the song.
Have you heard of a band from Melbourne called Oral Window?
No.
Oral or oral? Oral, as in listening.
For your ear hole.
Oral.
Right, yeah. Okay.
AU.
Because I recently saw them at a show with me.
Yep.
And they had a megaphone as well. So yeah, I'm thinking...
Bastards.
Uh-huh. Oh, they stole our idea.
I mean, it's nothing
new. But I saw you guys first.
So. It's nothing it's nothing new. I don't think it's anything new. But
not at all, no.
You know, I think when everyone else is screaming their heads off and... You know, we crack out a megaphone, which is something a bit different. I think it's something nice. And
but
I mean,
on that, though...
Yes, continue.
I'm totally going to cut you off. The one thing that... going back to one of your previous questions. The one thing that we really, 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 really liked about Scott as well was that he doesn't growl. He doesn't scream. He doesn't do any of that. So he just sings.
Yeah.
And that was the first tick of my box for me. That's exactly what we wanted. And Scott does that really well. So giving him things like the megaphone, and now come back to the current question, giving him things like the megaphone and the fish and the kazoo, just peppers it, gives it a bit of fun, breaks it up.
So in other words, it wouldn't be the same if you had someone who did growl, who did scream.
No, it's a completely different sound. And, you know, in previous incarnations of the band, you know, we were a little bit more straight metal, I guess you'd call it, or hard rock. And
really?
You know, let's go with that.
Yeah, all right, let's do that.
And we, you know, it was good for the time, but, you know, I think we're all happy with where we are at the moment and where it's heading. So
yes, very much so.
We're not trying to be a certain genre. We just play what we like to play and, you know, whatever people label us, whatever people...
So we were talking about megaphones and all of that sort of stuff, and not having a growler, which was a plus for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was good. You know, I like a lot of the heavier stuff, but it's not a major part of my listening. So, you know, I like nice melodies and stuff. So the fact that it can be a melodic instrument, not a rhythmic instrument, you know, is appealing.
I think... For the style of music that we're doing, a lot of other bands who are in and around the same kind of style typically have screamers and growlers and whatever, and that sounds great. But for what we wanted to do, we kind of thought, well, we want to appeal to a larger audience, but we also want to do something different. So why don't we just have somebody who, you know, can actually sing and sing very well? Enter Scott, does an excellent job at it.
So that was a consideration. Have you gone down the radio path of getting airplay with traditional radio?
Oh, look, we...
Or is that a name?
You know, we have tried to write shorter songs. You know, our songs are clocking in around 5 minutes just because that's what we're playing.
One of my recent songs pretty much hits the 10-minute mark.
Yeah, 10 minutes for Night of Romance.
Yeah.
Which will hopefully be in the album at the end of the year. But
nice plug.
Nice plug. Thanks. Butt plug.
And
well, you are here to plug yourselves,
exactly.
Boys.
Exactly. Wow. Three minutes, you know, it's not enough time for us to get an idea, you know, fully flesh out an idea.
No, it's not. 3 minutes anymore just doesn't cut it. Oh,
That's just one of Alan's drum solos.
That's a drum fill.
That's a drum fill, yeah.
But, you know, I like music that, you know, I like the Porcupine Trees, the Machine Heads and the Metallicas and all that stuff. And, you know, songs that take you somewhere and develop a theme and build on it till, you know, it takes you somewhere. I don't, you know, want to be done in 3 minutes, as in life. But
not touching that one. Leave it alone.
So, you know, I have no problem with writing songs and not getting airplay and going down the path where the people that want to listen to our music actively put our stuff on their iPod and their stereo. They don't listen to us because, you know, it's on between ad breaks on FM radio.
Have you guys played outside of Sydney?
Yes. Yeah. Once.
I was there. I know where we were.
I know recently you did go down to Canberra.
Twice. Yeah.
Yeah. So Melbourne at the end of 2009, which we played at the SB just in the downstairs room, which was.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was different. It was interesting. It was cold. Why are all our outside of Sydney gigs cold?
I know. We always managed to do them during winter.
But, you know, we drove down for one gig and, you know, it was fun. It was different. Saw the dog on the tucker box, you know, that kind of thing. But then we did Canberra a few weeks ago and less than ideal, the turnout, but, you know, whatever. This is part of the...
But they do want to get us back so they can get a bigger turnout for us during summer.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So they told us. We'll see what happens.
So tell me about the Sydney music scene from your point of view.
Make some friends and enemies. Oh, look. It's not the best. I think everyone knows that. I think there's a lot of contributing factors. I think it's part of the fault lies on the bands, part lies on the bookies, part lies on the venue owners, part lies on the audience, you know.
Part also lies on the government, just putting it out there.
Oh, controversial.
No, not at all. The reason I say that is because you've got people who move close to a pub, knowing there's a pub there,
yep,
and then complain that there's loud music. Well, hang on a second. Sorry, no, you just moved close towards a pub. What did you think was going to happen? Stop whinging. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, and I mean...
But the government lets them get away with it, and they go, oh, sorry, you can't play music anything other than 10:30. You've got to slow down, sorry. What a waste of time. It completely kills the scene altogether. And then, that's for me, it's a large contributing factor. It's not just a contributing factor. It's a huge issue. And the government lets these whingers get away with it. Yes, I'm calling them whingers.
Yep. But it's also, you know, it's cheaper and easier for a venue to put on a DJ in somewhere that just spins CDs for a night. You know, it's... Whereas a band, you know, it's a lot more expensive. You got to not employ the band, but you got to have the equipment, the right staging and everything. And that gets expensive. But, I mean, I think it's also the culture. You know, you can go onto YouTube and iTunes and hear music...
In the
comfort of your own home, yeah, where it's warm, yeah, and yeah, the sound's perfect, and, you know, why would you trek out? Mm. You know, so...
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of things. I mean, bookies, bands, the actual crowd, the audience, public, whatever you want to call them. You know, I think there's a lot going on. It's ultimately just a culture perception, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, it's cultural rather than...
Because if you go to Melbourne... The scene's completely different out there. It's alive. It's kicking. People go to shows whether they know the bands or not. In Sydney, there's none of that. Yeah, none of that at all.
Some say they're going to try it and change it, but when it happens, we'll know.
Mm. It's... How do I see the Sydney scene? Disappointing, in one word. But there are glimmers of shining light and bits and pieces where you say, you know what, that's just awesome that whatever has just happened is happening for whatever reason. You do see bits and pieces where you sort of go, you know what, this is awesome, but they're few and far between. So,
yeah, I mean, we only play shows every maybe 6 weeks now, just because one, you know, time just to lug all our stuff around and do all that. But also, you know, we've only got a small number of fans that will come out and see us every time, and we don't want to exhaust them.
Mm.
So, yeah, disappointing. I'll run with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
So you've got the album coming out at the end of the year. What's the aim after that? Promote the hell out of it.
Well, we're going to record it hopefully at the end of the year in December sometime.
Yeah, I mean, that's the aim. We'll be doing a lot of groundwork before then, so there are people excited about and anticipating it, obviously, because you don't want to just release it and somebody goes, oh, who are they? Because, you know, it's a lot of time, money invested, you know, into that. So, next 6 months is going to be a lot of planning, a lot of promoting ourselves. Then we'll launch it in some, you know, extravaganza with a lot of fireworks and pigeons and stuff.
Pigeons.
Why not? Go pigeon yourself. And then afterwards, you know, we'll promote the hell out of it and get it out there in any way we can. Mm. Maybe on pigeons.
What's the pigeons all of a sudden? What's wrong with you?
Pigeon metal. Metal pigeon. That really wouldn't work, would it?
So what was it like the very first time you saw the EP and you held the actual physical EP?
Heavy. There was a lot of them.
Shut up, Simon. We had actually recorded an EP prior to this one coming out.
Yep.
Prior to this one that we just, you know, got through the door. But for a number of different reasons, we didn't actually release it. So doing this new EP that, you know, we did at the end of last year and, you know, being able to actually hold it in your hand, for me, it was very cool because it was like, you know, finally can, you know, got our stuff on a CD. It was very cool because of the fact that we had the first one that we didn't release for a number of reasons, and then this one that we had released, nice big sort of, you know, release party, whatever you want to call it.
Mm.
It's very cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to, you know, if somebody comes up and goes, that was, you know, I really liked your set, you can go, yeah, have a CD.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we haven't been too strict on selling it or anything. We're not about, you know, making the money back. I think, you know, we have covered our costs. But, you know, I've still got, you know, a couple hundred of them sitting at home. So it's a lot of beer coasters. So we're happy to, you know, pass them out to somebody that's enjoying the show.
Yeah, yeah.
If somebody's happy to pay for it, then by all means, give me money.
So how important has the internet been for you guys, apart from the original ad that says, you know, drummer looking for band?
It's been a blessing and a burden. I referred to a religious term. What's wrong with me?
You did.
Ugh.
Lord bless this burden.
Yes.
Shut up, Simon.
Sorry. It's been a good thing because it helps to get your name out there. And there's lots of different areas that you can do that. I mean, arguably MySpace, yes or no, people can make up their own minds about that. These days anyway. Facebook, of course, huge, huge, huge help. And even Reverb Nation. The thing about Reverb Nation, though, is it kind of feels like it's for artists designed at artists and music enthusiasts.
Yep.
Your average everyday public, not so much. And that's where Facebook comes in. So you kind of, you know, do different areas that you're targeting. The problem in that is you've got to keep it updated and you've got to put the content on there. You've got to manage it. You've got to maintain it and all that kind of stuff. And that takes a lot of time. But that comes back to how do you want to expose yourself? And that's the whole thing. That's the whole point. So it's a good thing because it lets you do that, but it's a bad thing because it's like, I'm gonna do all this work to get it up and running.
But I mean, the thing is that we as artists and all artists have so many tools at our disposal, which is, you know, fantastic. You know, we write songs and email them to each other and download them on our phones and listen to last night's jam, and you know, it's great.
Look, the technology
is fantastic.
It's fantastic.
It's saturated. There is, you know, every second guy is in a band who's trying to make it, is trying to get somebody's attention. And
I don't think that's ever changed. I don't think it ever will.
No, but it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more noticeable because, you know, you can
get it. Because of the internet.
Yeah, right, totally. Okay. I don't think we've used it to its full capability, but that's because, you know, one, our own technical ability, and two, time. You know, as Alan was saying, you know, you got to keep it updated all the time. You've got to have good ideas to cut through all that noise.
Yes.
But I think if we didn't have the internet, social media, I think we'd be as far as we are now.
Yeah.
Be nice to have a couple more fans on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
And I will put a link on the show notes, so if you want to check these guys out, go and check them out.
You're a star, mate.
I know that before this interview, you guys put up on Facebook on your page, you know, if anyone has any questions, you know, for this interview, you know, feel free to ask them.
Don't even know if I checked that.
Oh.
Because I think you guys were in here. You guys have been in
here. Hang on. I shall return.
Oh, God.
Because I know you guys have been in here for, you know, a lot earlier.
Yeah. Yes.
That's been a long day for you guys here.
Well, we're doing
it's been a very long day.
We're doing the drums. We started at 12 and we plan to go through till 9 o'clock tonight. What's the time now, Simon?
It's 5:30.
5:30, there you go. So it's gonna be a long day. We haven't killed each other yet.
No.
There has been no blood spilled yet, but it's possible that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've mainly, you know, use Facebook as a dialogue with people. So, you know, you invite feedback as you said, you know, ask them for questions. And I think that's what's really good about it. You know, guys like Periphery do it really well where they have this connection with their fans.
Yeah, they're really good at it.
So, you know, something that I'd like to do a little bit better. But, yeah, it's just that time.
Damn time.
God damn it.
Do you have people at gigs? Is there one song in particular that people always scream at you to play?
There is one song that I know that people were hoping would be on the EP that wasn't on the EP.
Mm.
And that's Valium. That's usually the song we play at the end of a set. And people
sing. Oh, now you're giving it away.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, crap.
It's self-promotion, boys.
So you suck, Simon. Shut up. Stop talking.
Just want to point out, I remain silent for that whole interlude. And this one.
That's and I think Neverland. Yeah, that, I think Valium is one of the bigger ones, and we haven't even recorded it properly yet, so all people are going off is what they hear when we play it live, which is good to hear that people are paying attention to that.
Yeah.
But I think people also like Neverland, and they like to hear that. Yeah. I've noticed that whenever we play, people sort of go, yay, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Everyone likes different things. And I think, you know, we give them that range in the set, you know. Night of Romance is really quiet and...
At least at first.
Yeah, at first, yeah. So,
it's
yeah.
It's a deception.
But Valium is definitely one that people come up to me afterwards and just go, is that on the EP? So it'll be interesting to see, once we put that on there, what kind of response we'll get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ironically, it's one of the least proggiest songs we have.
Yeah.
Maybe we're doing it wrong.
Maybe we are doing it wrong.
Wasting all our time.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should just go back and be a thrash band.
I know, right?
Should we?
No.
So you're not... although then again, with the singer that you've got now, with Scott, it's a bit more difficult to go back to that sort of thing.
I don't think it's a going back, because the song still has elements of prog in there, and it is still very much us. And the newer song that we're writing now is pretty thrashy as well. Mm. So I think we kind of go in and out depending on what's going on at the time. But that's the good thing for me with what we do, is that we don't necessarily adhere to one genre. We can sort of bounce in and out. Keeps it interesting. And it's good for an audience because they don't sit there going, this song sounds like the last one, or this is really boring. Because every song is different and they can sort of go, be entertained and
I hate engaged by it. I hate going to gigs and then, you know, you go off, get a beer. Then you go to the bathroom, you come back 10 minutes later and it's like, are they still playing the same song?
Yeah, every song sounds the same. I
So finally, before we ask you where we can find you on the interweb, and we play a couple of songs to take us out, if you could go back in time and you could talk to like 2008 versions of you guys when you were first starting the band, was there one major thing that you've learnt that you'd like to talk to the old guys and say, hey...
You can answer this one first.
Wow, what a good question.
Well, I know, right? Oh, God.
Wow. Whoa. That's so deep. And you've taken time to go this deep now, which is good.
Did you have to say it like that? Sorry. Really?
I don't know. This is me thinking. So when you go back and you edit this, you're putting some thinking music, right?
Yeah. I can actually see the steam coming out of his ears. Like his brain's going overtime.
I think everything we've done, you know, again, it's going to sound cliches, but has brought us to this point. I don't think I would change any of it because, you know, who knows where we'd be now. Answer. Yeah, sorry. I don't think I would change anything. You know, I might just let them know that, you know, recording drums during the EP is going to take a little bit longer than, you know, originally anticipated because Alan hits so many drums, so book in an extra day or two. Maybe that kind of stuff.
Do you want to find yourself a new drummer?
No.
Then shut up.
So, you know, it's all been good. It's been a good ride, and you know, hopefully it keeps going for a lot longer.
Mm.
And Alan's beard is a lot longer and greyer.
Greyer.
Mm.
You think it's going to last that long?
I don't know. Probably until somebody notices us. Too pessimistic?
Whatever, I don't care. I pretty much am going to reflect what Simon said. I wouldn't change a damn thing. He's absolutely right. You know, everything that has happened has brought us to this point. And that's only a good thing. I mean, you could ask anybody that question. You could say, you know, you're 30 years old now. If you could go back to an 18-year-old, what would you say to yourself? Yeah. But you know what? If you did change anything back at that point, you wouldn't be the person you are now,
yep.
for better or worse. So yeah, I wouldn't change a damn thing. If I were to go back, I wouldn't say anything. I'd just sit back and observe and sort of go, I really did and said that? What the hell, man? What is wrong with me?
My beard wasn't always this long?
My beard was actually short at some point. My God. When did that happen? Oh, 2008. Sorry.
Yeah.
Terrible. That's my answer.
Awesome. So what's the best place? Where's the best place to find you guys online?
Oh, there's the Facebook.
The Facial Network.
There's the MySpace. There's the YouTube. I think they're all just facebook.com/centeredself. Yes. CENTREDSELF.
Wow.
Well, for those listening overseas, the Australian spelling. Yeah.
And
MySpace. /centeredself. Same spelling. And YouTube, Centered Self Band. So /CenteredSelfBand.
Wow, he's getting all demeaning and stuff now.
And Sign Me to Roadrunner, we're on there too.
Yes, we are.
Which is a really cool site that we use. And it's good for feedback, which we haven't really had before. Like listeners from all over the world giving us feedback on the songs.
Yeah, that's true. We've gotten some really interesting comments.
Yeah, people telling us that we sound a little bit more like System of a Down.
Which we never thought that would happen.
Yeah. It's weird. So it's just really interesting. And I write a blog for that as well. Which is a lot of fun, gives us a little bit more exposure. So sign me to Roadrunner.
There's actually some good information. I'm totally going to plug you right now. There's actually some good information on your blog on there as well. Like, some of it might be common sense, but for a lot of bands, that might completely escape them and they won't notice that until somebody says, you should try doing this. Mm. So for any of you, the upcoming bands out there, whatever, jump on Sign Me to Roadrunner and have a look for Simon's blog because there's actually some good information on there.
It's called When the Music Stops.
There you go. I have my own separate drummer page on Facebook too, so if anybody wants to see shots of the kit.
Yeah, we'll link up to that as well.
Yeah, cool. There's what I use on there, heads, toms, cymbals, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And any general stuff I'm doing with other projects that I'm working with Simon or other people on.
Indeed.
Totally plugging myself.
I notice a drumstick over there. How many of those do you go through on an average gig?
How many sticks do I go through? Not as many as you'd think, actually.
It's got a few spares on the kit just in case he drops them just in case when he drops them.
Ouch.
Come on, you can do better than that.
He dropped a stick! I told you! I told you! I know when we went to a carnival, I don't know the drummer's name. He completely escapes me. But I noticed he broke a lot of sticks. You can seem to throw them to the side frequently. Once every, you know, two or three songs. And it's like, wow, he hits either really hard or whatever. I don't break sticks that often.
No.
Which is...
He's losing just around the room.
You want me to smack you, don't you?
Yes.
Ugh. Yuck. No, I don't break sticks that often. I usually find that I throw them out once they've got completely chipped.
Yep.
Sort of go, you are not usable anymore, and I just throw it away. That's usually what happens.
Or you give it to a music podcaster. and puts it with the other ones.
Oh, well, subtle. Wow. I see what's going on here. There it is. Well, you know what? Speak to my people and I'll get my people to talk to your people and we'll look something up. Yeah, totally. Done.
No worries. So, guys, it's been a lot of fun. Simon, yes. Alan, sent itself.
Thank you very much, Irk.
And hi to the other guys in the band, too, even though they couldn't be here.
Yes.
Yeah, we're totally here. See, that was them.
Yeah, that was them. Shut up. Back in your box.
You've been listening to Irk with Simon and Alan from Scent Itself. This has been Irk FM episode 174. And on behalf of all three of us, it's good night, Interweb.
Interweb.
And good night.
Sleep tight.
Oh, creepy.
I keep a measure of madness. I make a method of how to use. Rip a little something from the crevice. If it's something that I can use. Break 'em down, keep 'em coming, if you don't stop, I'd let you be or something. Pick a cigarette, make a spark, the synchronicity knocks you up a the bed. Break 'em down, keep 'em coming, a shooting star, I make you feel something. Pick a cigarette, make a spark, the synchronicity knocks you up a the bed. Rub yourself out, rub yourself out, rub yourself out. Synchronicity knocks you up for the better. Break 'em down, keep 'em coming, a shooting.
Hi, you're with Simon and Alan from Send Itself.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
And Irk has overtaken Alan's drum kit, his behemoth drum kit. That's
okay, Alan, can Irk have a go now?
I think I just got replaced.
I know, right?
If Simon wasn't such a dick, this would be a lot easier.
Okay.
All right. Well, you can go first, Simon.
So this is Simon. Hi, this is Simon. Hi, this is Alan. We're from Send Itself.
Do you want to do them individually, or do you want to do them together?
Do it together, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, this is Simon.
And this is Alan!
From Send Itself.
That was so American.
I know, right?
Are you listening? You do it.
Now?
Whatever. Go.
Irk. Irk FM.
So what is it? What's the first one you want us to do? We'll do it one by one.
We'll do it. We'll do Irk FM.
Okay.
So, hi, I'm Simon. Hi, I'm Alan.
We're from Send Itself.
You're listening to Irk FM. Find us online at insert your your main site here.
Right.
Facebook, MySpace, YouTube. Just search Send Itself.
You can do that.
Okay.
Hi, this is Simon.
And this is Alan.
And we are from
Send Itself.
That was really weird.
I don't care.
All right. And you're listening to
Irk FM.
You can find us on
Facebook,
YouTube,
MySpace.
Just search
Send
Itself.
Yeah.
Or something.
Oh my God. Cheesiest promo ever, but that will stand out.
It's totally the one I want you to run too.
And you're listening to
Insomnia Radio.
It's on my cube.
Yes.
Irk FM Metal Monday, so metal this one up.
Let's do Richard Mercer style.
What the fuck's that?
Love song dedications.
Oh, oh God.
Irk FM Metal Mondays.
Metal Monday, yeah.
You listen to Metal Monday.
Hi, this is Simon.
And this is Alan.
And we are from Centered Self. You've been listening to... What are we listening to?
Irk FM Metal Monday. And okay. Then at the end, you're just going to have to metal it up because talking like this isn't really metal.
Hi, we are Centered Self.
We? What's this we business?
We.
We're a band?
We are a band.
What's your name?
Simon.
What's my name?
Alan.
Why did I get you to tell me that?
I don't know.
I don't mind. That's what I love.
So hopefully,
what we do.
You know, we don't have that. Hopefully, nobody leaves to go to the bathroom while we're playing because it's just too awesome.
We should get Scott to point them out, name and shame them.
Exactly.
We should totally do that.
You know, wet themselves.
Yes.
Is that too much?
No. Let's make it happen. Do
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
We're totally doing this.
Next gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. People are going to be pissing themselves. Can I say piss? I just did.
You just
whatever.
Did.
What was that?
Sometimes my wrist cracks. So
Oh, it even sounds wrong. Oh, I don't know whether you can hear that, but
my
that's
wrist
just
cracking.
Just whatever.
But then we did Canberra a few weeks ago, and it was cold as a witch's tit. And it
you can't
was,
say that, Simon.
Sorry.
Witch's breast.
Sorry.
That's better.
And at least you didn't say no. No. Awkward. You know, it was less than ideal, the turnout, but you know, whatever. This is part of the...
But they do want to get us back so they can get a bigger turnout for us during summer.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So they told us. Sorry, I was worried that I had to put my beard caught in the microphone.
Beard in the microphone. I feel sorry for the next person that has to talk into that. And they just go, ooh, mum's beard. Britney's mum's pubes.
I am. I am taking that microphone overseas.
So. Yeah. Oh, crap. You might want to disinfect it first.
Yeah, it might not get through customs.
Ew.
Quarantine.
Anyway. You, every day with you is like a kick in the nuts. Seriously.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened.
Harsh.
Yeah, that's a bit harsh, yeah.
You've got plenty of bloopers now. You could like make a fucking... You can throw this in there somewhere in between.